Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? Welcome to day question mark of our our podcast, our holiday podcast, Waypoint's holiday extravaganza, our pantheon of incredibly good games, our look back at a year both terrible and pretty good as far as video games go. Today we are going to talk about the games that we all loved, but that maybe didn't make it onto our anybody else's lists. I think the reason I wanted to do this topic was that Rob, today you wrote a piece about the great racing games that came out this year, and that I don't think anyone else on this call has played. I maybe dipped my toes here or there, but it seems like you've taken a bigger leap into the world of racing. And I thought that would be a good jumping off point to maybe talk about other games where, like, hey, the other people on this call maybe didn't play, but they're good.
Yeah. As far as the racing games piece goes, I think it's interesting that the game that made my list wasn't actually the racing games that I spent most of the piece writing about. It was the Racing Management Sim. That was probably my favorite racing game of the year, and I'm talking about Motorsport Manager, which I only got around to playing this year. It came out late last year. And it is a sports management game about motorsports. And I have a feeling that nobody else got around to playing this, and I have a feeling that this is extremely my bullshit that I'm 100% on. And just very weirdly, that ended up resonating more with me this year than any of the actual, like, driving games that I played. As far as driving games go, it was an interesting, like, with the exception of maybe this also being the weird era of the immersive sim, which we were talking about before the podcast, just getting the sudden deluge of this sort of niche genre. This was also a year where, like, a lot of major racing games came out all at once. And they're all, I think, two sort of people on the outside of the genre. There's a lot of overlap between them, or they all seem really similar, right? Like, you know, what's the difference really between a Forza, between a Project Cars, between a Gran Turismo? But there's actually a ton of, like, little nuanced differences between them. And I guess I sort of looked at this year as, like, with a little bit of dread, that when you have so many good things coming out all at once, these different expressions of the same idea end up kind of being forced into competition with each other in a way that makes me personally a little bit anxious about some of these franchises, right? Like Forza is going to be fine. It's a flagship. Project Cars, I do worry about a little bit, right? Like, what becomes of the sort of really niche, you know, take on the racing sim in a year that has, you know, the major titans, the Gran Turismo and the Forzas, hitting up at the same time.
Is Project Cars published by, like, Bandai Namco, or is it independent at all? Oh, okay. So, like, they're reliant on publisher stuff, or they do stuff independently, or...
Look, so Project Cars has an interesting... So, originally, it was crowdfunded.
That's what I thought.
The first game went on, like, World of Mass Development or something. It was a crowdfunded racing game made by Slightly Mad Studios, who made the Need for Speed Shift games, which were fucking awesome. And they also worked on the Simbin Racing series from some years back, which was another great series. So they make this crowdfunding pitch. It succeeded, and full disclosure, I backed it to get access to Project Cars when it was like Project Cars 1, when it was like an alpha. just to see what was going on there. And I think I ended up actually making a profit on that. Like, wow, literally, really? They did. Full literally, disclosure. I got all my money back.
God.
Like,
wow.
A year, like, the year it came out, they gave me, like, $40 back. And then, like, I kept getting these, like, $20 payments.
That's incredible, like, and wild. We live in the age of fake, so it's not like it's as rare of a thing as it was. But the fact that they did that with that first game was so incredible, and it felt so strange because I don't think we'd had that part of the conversation around crowdfunding yet, and also because it seemed like such an outsider game. Like Project Cars, the first Project Cars, I haven't played Project Cars 2 yet, but like the first one was so focused on just, hey, we want to simulate driving in a way that is more approachable than like the highest level simulations, but like still very interested in just, can you learn how to take this corner? Can you go into a race with a tuned car? And not at all about like getting new cars or winning a campaign or any of that stuff. And so it seemed like such a niche thing, and I'm glad it's found some success.
Yeah, but what I don't know if that means that they're still basically independent, right? Like, right, I don't know if Bandai, I don't know what the relationship with Bandai Namco is at this point. Like, they didn't crowdfund the second game, so but I have no idea.
Probably made money on that first one, right? So,
right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Did the first game come out at retail?
Yeah, eventually. Oh, okay. It started on PC, and then I think Sony picked it up.
I wouldn't be shocked with the sequel if it was it was more of a distribution PR deal. It's like, yeah, hey, you get a cut of profits and you make all this like hard shit that a publisher is good at easier. I don't know, but it's definitely possible.
Yeah, and so it was, you know, it was just an odd year where you had all these games sort of hitting up, and I expected one of them to sort of stand out for me and end up being like, you know, my racing game of the year, and that'd be the one I ended up talking about on this podcast. And while I did enjoy a lot of these racing games, those were not the ones that I ended up getting really hooked on. The one I got really hooked on finally released like in like last November, and it's Motorsport Manager from Sega, published by Sega. It's from PlaySport Games, and it is basically about like running a Formula One racing team, which is extremely my shit. Like, I love F1. And the thing about F1 is that it's a hyper political sport. It's an engineer's racing sport. Like, the driver matters a great deal, but like, it's really a contest of like engineering and to a degree project management. And I ended up sinking so much time into this game. Like, I was playing it for a 3 Moves Ahead subject topic. We were talking about sports management games. And then I just kept playing it because if you ever watch like an actual race, there's all those people on the pit wall, right, with the headsets, and they're like watching the telemetry coming off the cars, mm-hmm. and they're like making the strategy calls and all this stuff. You do that in this game. Huh. And so you are the person there like watching lap times, right? And you just get like, you see a lap time dip, like increase just a little bit. Like your driver is just a little bit slower around the track that time. Does that mean that like the tires are well and truly shot, or they just have a mediocre lap and you can leave them out there a little bit longer? And
that sounds so stressful to me because those are the sorts of calls that you're like, oh, I can't rush to make this call, but if I don't, and then you get that third lower lap time in a row, fourth, fifth, and you're like, all right, nope, got it. Has to. I fucked up. I could have pulled them out 3 laps ago, and could have turned this whole thing around, and instead I was too conservative on this, and just like that stuff is so brutal to me.
Oh, but when you get it right, because F1 does have a hierarchy. Like, there are richer teams that have greater resources and use those to build better cars. And if you're a middling team, like the one I was sort of leading in my sort of fantasy season, you have to be a little scrappy. You have to, like, you know, bet on some suboptimal strategies and hope things break your way. And when they do, it feels so good. Like, you feel like you stole that race. Like, one of my favorite gaming moments this year was, it was this race where I had no shot in hell of winning. I'd had a bad qualifying and everything. But on the day of the race, there was a heavy rainstorm projected to arrive. And with the rules of the race, you actually have to drive on two different tire compounds. So if you start the race on a softer tire, you eventually have to like switch to a harder tire, which lasts longer but isn't as grippy on the racing surface. But if the weather comes in, if it starts to rain, that rule goes out the window. Because theoretically, everybody's going to have to change for wet weather tires anyway. And so the rain was coming in, but it wasn't coming in fast enough. Like the chance of rain kept being like a little too low. And like, I didn't want to bring my car in because if I did, and then I switched on to a new tire and then it started to rain, then I was fucked. But in the meantime, like my guys are just getting rolled out there. Like they're on their tires are shot. Everyone has changed. Everyone is faster. I am struggling to stay in like the top 16. And then the heavens just open. They open just as my lead driver is coming around toward the pit entrance. Immediately he comes in, stops. We do a quick stop. He puts on the rain tires, races back out there. And dude, it was like, you know, fox in a hen house. Like goes out there, is just visibly faster on the track. Like just one overtake after another, just snapping up these other drivers who are basically now like trying to labor around the track on slicks during like a downpour. And like in the space of two laps, basically goes from like 14th to first. And like that's how my team notched its first win. And it was all this like just like razor tension of like you keep checking the weather forecast, like is it raining yet? Is it raining yet? You're watching the intervals in your lap times. And that's kind of what this game is all about. It's just that, you know, it's that managing that race day situation and like tracking all these different like dynamic variables. And then on some level, like there's a science to it, but then there's also just a lot of like, you know, gut check moments. And it feels so good.
That sounds really great. That sounds like that's like one of those games there. It feels like a thing that I would actually eat up in a mobile, maybe more streamlined version of it, because that sort of I'm managing something while stuff is happening on the screen and deciding what big picture strategy to take, but not necessarily, I don't necessarily need to get behind the wheel, is exactly what I actually want in a lot of my mobile experiences. And what I'm saying is if there's another F1 racing or similar racing management game on mobile, someone should let me know, outside of the Cairo soft one, which I think I played 3 years ago, which was also very good.
It's a cute little game.
That's a cute game. It's a cute little, it's not as good as the Kairosoft soccer game, which if you haven't played, you should. That game is fucking great.
Does it feel different than just every other Kairosoft game? Or are they all the same?
I think that there's like three sub-genres of Kairosoft game at this point.
What exactly is that? Because I'm not familiar with Kairosoft.
Do you know Game Dev Story?
Yes.
Okay, that's, sure do. That's made by a company called Kairosoft.
Okay.
K-A-I-R-O-S-O-F-T. And Kairosoft does not just make Game Dev Story. They make any words you think.
Every story.
Story.
Gotcha.
Grand Prix story. Hot Spring story. Epic Astro story. Mega Mall story. And then some that don't have story, like Dungeon Village and Cafeteria Nipponica. And like there are like three subgenres of Kairosoft story. One of them is like the development side one, which is the game dev story. There's also like a comic creation story one, something like that. Manga artist story or something, where it's like, okay, you're hiring staff to people with unique traits who are good at making certain types of things, and you're, you know, putting out fake games or comics or movies or whatever. The second one is like about building a place, whether that's like a mall food court or a city, and that's all about like building adjacency bonuses. Like, oh, if you build the you know, the little fishing dock mm-hmm. next to the sushi shop, you get a bonus. And the third one is tend to be like these sports management games where okay. it's the same stuff. It's adjacency bonuses and it's characters who have attributes, but then they go towards like these these competitive events, and then it's like, oh, hey, does your team work or does your car win or whatever, to do your RPG characters win the fight. I like them, they're cute, but these are not the things that are on my list this year, so I shouldn't spend more radio time talking about them. More airtime, rather. The one that is on my list that I think is not on anybody else's list, though, and it's fairly high on my list, is Heat Signature.
Ooh.
I don't think no one else has dipped toes into this game really this year.
I've seen it. I've seen you play it.
Yeah, it's a game that if I had played, my guess is that it would have Like, in some ways, I avoided it because, like, one, I don't have the time, and two, I bet I'd really like this game. It's like, I'm just going to have to punt it to next year.
To next year, yeah. So it is a game by Suspicious Developments, fantastic name always, which is the studio created by former PC Gamer editor Tom Francis, who also made, and people probably know, developed the studio for Gunpoint.
Which is a fucking incredible
game that came out years ago that was kind of a cyberpunk, tech-noir, like, action puzzler about breaking into buildings. And this is also a game about breaking into things. Heat Signature, though, is a game about breaking into spaceships. The way that works is you have a kind of a top-down view on space, on all of space, and you're in a little kind of, it's almost like an escape pod that has its own power source and its own kind of ability to move through space and juke around enemy spacecraft, and you eventually find a place to dock and board these spaceships. And it's again completely top-down game. It looks something like Hotline Miami, or something like that. Again, completely top down, and like Hotline Miami, the goal is to kind of move into these spaces, eliminate or avoid enemies. I mean, Hotline Miami, you're not avoiding shit, you're killing people.
Yeah.
I guess Hotline Miami 2 had some stealth stuff, right? But in Heat Signature, the goal is like, okay, you get a mission because you're a kind of a galactic fixer, where okay, now you have to break into this spaceship and steal the Penumbra device, which is just a weird space MacGuffin. And to do that, you know, you board on the side of a ship and you go inside and, you know, you use your wrench to knock people out, or you use your teleportation devices to move around them, you know, without getting into trouble. You get the Penumbra device, you get off the ship. And like, that's the very basic pitch. And it's lots of procedural generation, and it's lots of like interesting little systemic moving parts. And there is no way to pitch this game that communicates the way it generates stories in a way that is different than what I normally talk about when I talk about games generating stories. Because I talk a lot about systems-driven gameplay. I talk about games like Breath of the Wild and Far Cry 2, and even stuff like the immersive sims, Danielle, that I know, I suspect we might talk about in a moment. So I don't know, maybe Prey will end up on multiple people's lists.
Wait, is that on nobody else's list?
So,
are you shitting me?
Not at all.
Rob!
No, man, I've got you covered. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Thank you. I knew.
As,
I know.
As Rob furiously edits his number 10.
No!
Sorry, Motorsport Manager. Late development. Motorsport Manager is actually a 2016 game anyway. It did come out late, but to hell with it. Prey. We love Prey now. We're all Prey.
Thank you.
We're all Prey.
Thank you.
Unlike those games, which I intend to tell the story of a few minutes or even 30 seconds, the stories that I tell about Heat Signature are often about what happens in the blink of an eye. You open the door and you think you have a plan. And then the beauty of Heat Signature is your plan is shit. You say something like, okay, the Penumbra device is just behind that locked door. Between me and that locked door, it's behind that locked door in the room that I'm in. All I have to do is open this door, go across this room, and steal this key from this guy who has the key to this door. He's looking the other way. This should be no problem. And as you start to approach, you remember suddenly that while this guy is just a regular guard looking at a wall, like looking at a terminal or something, and you just take the key from him, there is someone on the other side of the wall that has a device that registers heat signatures, hence the name Heat Signature, and that spots you approaching him. And that other person might also have maybe a teleportation device that lets them teleport over to you. And unfortunately, another thing you've forgotten is you've taken out a special contract for this mission that says you're not allowed to kill or hurt anybody. And so now this guy is zipped over to you. Or maybe it just says you can't kill them. So you can't use that special gun that you have that can shoot through armor. And instead, all you have is this wrench. And so now you have this blink of an eye moment where you pause the game because like some of my favorite strategy games or tactics games, what is at play is your planning and your ability to improvise, not your not just like your moment to moment kind of skill, not your Twitch action. And so you hit pause and you go, okay, how the fuck do I get out of this one? You look at your items and you say, okay, I don't have anything that will knock this guy out, but will not kill him, or that will penetrate his armor without hurting him. And so you go, okay, well, what do I have? And you look through all like the five items you've brought with you, maybe something you've picked up here, and you say like, okay, I have, I could teleport away and then use this item called a key cloner to quickly clone the key instead of stealing it and then run back to the door. Or I could swap the guy who has I could shoot at the guy who has the armor, to distract him and then teleport and switch spots with him and steal from the other guy. And the other guy who I've swapped around will be confused, won't know where I am, and I can sneak away. Or I could use a glitch trap to teleport him somewhere else. Or I could use a stealth shield. Like, there's so many options to figure out how to get away from that whatever that trouble is. And in that way, it feels almost like it belongs in the same category as Invisible Ink. It is not as high on my list or in my personal internal list as Invisible Ink is, but it's similar in that the joy comes not only from what I think is some fantastic flavor and from the wonderful sci-fi world building that actually happens through some conversations in this world. There's also all these different factions, and they all have different equipment that you can eventually take from them as you slowly colonize and take over their territory, because they're evil mega corporations and weird glitch hackers. There's also just this, the core of it is that feeling of getting in over your head and then having to dig yourself out. And that's a feeling that I've liked in a lot of games this year, but you know, maybe that's just the year it is. I look at my list and I think about games like Battlegrounds and Zelda and Heat Signature, and the thing that runs through all of those is, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, how did we end up here? Oh fuck, how do I get out with my life? And I don't think any of them does it as well as Heat Signature, because you end up just feeling brilliant. And it's definitely a game worth playing over the winter break or in 2018 if you can find the time. That is my pitch on Heat Signature.
I want to play that game.
It's really good. Also has the best names I've ever seen in a video game. and I take my names very, 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 very seriously. But if I just jump into Heat Signature right now, I fucking guarantee you I will find some names that are like...
It's all algorithm too, right?
It's all procedural. I mean, like, it's pulling from lists, right?
Right.
All the ships are also procedural, right? The character names, I just booted it up. Vega Polaris.
Yeah.
Aniko Albrecht. Misty Delphinus and Cestus Fluker. Great names. Oh. Fantastic names.
Way better than Biggs Darklighter.
Way better than... That's damn right. Fuck you, Biggs Darklighter. and your brother Gavin, too. that's the one. And for me, I think that's the thing that I didn't expect from it would be that it would be a game that I could go back to and just kind of like... do a quick mission or two, or like the way it's structured is that you can do kind of building up a reputation meter that will eventually let you take over an enemy space station, basically. And it's easy enough to be like, oh, I want to put 25 minutes aside tonight to take over another space station. I'll do like 5 or 6 missions and I'll take over that enemy space station. Or usually I'll do five or six missions so that I can unlock the personal mission of this character I'm playing. Cause it also just has a really cool structure where you play as these kind of like special agents or whatever who all have their own goals, who, you know, my character's goal might be to save their partner who has been kidnapped, or get revenge for their father who was killed, or steal a specific, you know, weird space MacGuffin so that they can retire and get out of the game for good. And along the way, like, the thing, one of my favorite little moments there is when you do finish that personal mission, you can retire them and you can you can choose one of their items that will go out into a pool of items that other players and that you can find in the future. So you can I use this one special stealth shield that was able to recharge itself in the middle of a mission over and over with this character. I'm going to pass that one on. And it's not like Rogue Legacy or something where you're literally giving an item down to somebody, to another character. It just kind of goes out into space and another player or you will open a chest on a spaceship, you know, 3 days later and find it and be like, oh fuck yeah, this shield is sick. And I love games that let you tell your own stories in that specific way. So shout outs to Heat Signature, one of my top 10 games of the year.
Nice.
Patrick and Rob, what do y'all have up your sleeves?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Prey is a game that I don't think is on anyone else's list.
Uh-huh.
Nah.
You fuck up.
Don't tease me like
wow.
that.
Wow, just aggressive. Aggressive. So I slightly cheated with my number 10, which I believe is not on anyone else's list. In which I picked both Doki Doki Literature Club and Dream Daddy. I presume neither of those games are on anyone else's list.
The visual novel number 10.
The Patrick right Klepek Annual Visual Novel Award.
The
memorial, yeah.
Well, and it was part of the reason I picked both was both to cheat and both that you mentioned. And also because sort of like my interest in them were – like part of what I liked about them overlapped, which is that – So I think like a lot of people, like there are lots of fans of visual novels, but I think there are lots of people who look at certain parts of visual novels and get turned off by the genre sort of as a whole. Like when I would review games like Danganronpa for Giant Bomb, like I'd get a bunch of shit from people when I would like make a sticking point to be like, the fan service in these games like does a great disservice to what these games are doing well. When I reviewed 999, I think I brought up the same thing, or at least when I wrote about it, in which... you know, by fan service, I mean like it's like like there's no reason for these women to be busting out of their clothes, and there's no reason for a panty shot to just like show up out of nowhere, because like both those games told like incredible stories that I think absent those things, a lot of people would really enjoy. But I think a lot of people make assumptions about those types of games because they see those things and end up just going like. A lot of, there's only so many games you can play. Like, I don't need to play the game with the panty shots. And so part of what I really enjoyed about... So, Doki Doki Literature Club is a game that... and I'm not going to spoil, like, where it goes. But opens for probably a little bit too long being a very stereotypical sort of, like, romance-based visual novel in which a dorky kid ends up in a literature club with just four... really gorgeous women that, of course, immediately have crushes on him, and then you get to choose like which amazingly beautiful girl are you going to get with? And in that, it does like sort of very stereotypical things. Like there's a moment that I didn't get in my path, but where like you have to help one of the women who they constantly make jokes about how. She is her boobs are too big because she's wearing a push-up bra because she wants to look cool around you and sexy. Like, oh, because of that, like her shirt kind of busts a little, and you have to like button the shirt back up for her and shit like that. But it is done in service. Like, it is aware of like the tropes it is playing with. All of that stuff is done in service to upend your expectations later. In which you think you're getting X and you end up getting Y, and then the way that characters are acting are subverted or informed by unexpected things that happen later in the story. And that is both sort of like the horror elements that people have talked about in that game, and that also just sort of the sort of like story-based explanation. Like, again, I'm trying to kind of dance around it because I think it's really important that the way the game deploys its story is really interesting and worthwhile, and part of, I think, its... the way it works is because it is unexpected and the way it is presented. But it was a game that I really, other than some like really fun tricks it does towards the end, the way it uses expectations against you is, I thought was like just really tremendous. And even as someone that is only casually aware of the stereotypes of these types of games, I think anyone that is even just vaguely aware of how a visual novel is supposed to play out, even if that is from uninformed stereotypes of what you think how those games play out, it works on both levels. Mm-hmm. And so that's a huge part of why I found that game to be just tremendously well written and interesting. And Dream Daddy, which is a game I played earlier this year, if people aren't familiar with the premise, it's, you know, you just happen Yeah, so you just happen to move into a cul-de-sac full of extremely attractive men, and you are interested in getting more socialized. That's kind of the premise of the game, is that it's not necessarily about a romantic pursuit, although you're very easily able to kind of go down that route. But your kid is going off to college, and your whole life has been centered around your kid, and so suddenly you're faced with the prospect of, like, oh, shit, like, what am I going to do when she goes away to school? I should probably start interacting with the outside world. And it's a game where it's very funny. It's very witty. It's very smart. It's very empathetic. But it would be so easy to imagine a version of this game in which it uses, like, the idea that is premised on a bunch of gay men wanting to get with one another as, like, the butt of its jokes. Like, it would use that as a way to both play within stereotypes and to use those stereotypes as a form of humor. And it doesn't do that. Like, I don't know if I've played a game with more heart than Dream Daddy. And it's one where, as I wrote in my top 10 list, I only played once. Even though a lot of the reason people play these games, I don't know to presume why everyone plays, but a lot of the appeal of these games is to play the different routes.
Yeah, you want to see the different routes. You want to see the different endings. You want to see all the different characters interacting, and like, it isn't even just the endings. Actually, it can be like you get onto a route with a character who you didn't see before. You thought like, oh, this person's just like a snarky asshole, and then you do their route, and it's like,
right.
Oh shit, actually, this person has a tragic past. That's why they're a snarky asshole.
Right, right. For me, I quickly became enamored with Matt, the very cool and handsome owner of the coffee shop around the corner from my house, and was dead set, like, this is not going to be a friendship. This is going to be something more. And at the end of the game, he rejected that. Like, he still wanted to be friends. And, like, it, like, broke my heart, and I was like, not in a fuck this. It was more just, I felt that was the canonical route. Like, I didn't need to go see... Like, I looked up a couple other things because I thought it was kind of interesting, but, like, I felt so strongly about how that route played out that I was like, that was enough. That, like, two and a half hours was enough for me. Like, and the fact that I was able to come to that conclusion, I thought spoke to how well the game was written. That in a game in which, like, they're explicitly designed for, like, multiple player views for you to see how things play out, I had such a strong reaction to the one way it played out that I said, that's fine. Like, that was my story, and that's enough for me. And so I think between that and the way it treats a subject that could have otherwise been, I think, fumbled pretty easily, the through line between the two was a sort of an earnestness and a subversion of expectations, and the fact that they both successfully avoid a lot of the shitty traps that I find annoying and troublesome and limiting for an audience, for a large audience. Neither of these games falls into that. Or even when Doki Doki does, it does so with intent that is beyond just, like, well, in order to sell this, we need to pander to a certain audience that expects these things to be in this game. So... those were the two that I felt really strongly about. That was my justification for getting them both in number 10. Was like, oh, the through line is a justification. That's
fine.
You have
a topic you want to write about. That's that's what this is, really.
Yes.
All right.
I'm really dying to know about how the game with the girl busting out of her clothes salvages that representation. Like, I'm real curious how it pulled the fat out of the fire.
It's a free game, my understanding is, Rob, so you could figure it out. You could go right now. Not right now. We have to finish these podcasts. But afterwards. Afterwards, go play Doki Doki Literature Club.
It might end up on his list then.
It might and ruin this podcast.
Oh, no. Well, that's
sorry,
why you have
Motorsport
a backup,
manager.
Right? Yeah.
Maybe it'll knock Prey off.
No!
That's my whole strategy with this whole podcast.
No!
Just to make us all reconfigure our lists entirely? Yeah. Yeah. So, Danielle, it's not Prey. What is the game on your list that nobody else has?
I have a few. I mean, I have another visual novel
we all have a few.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like, if you want a through line, Patrick, I think you should also play Butterfly Soup and put that in 10 as well.
Yeah, I've meant to play that game. That's about the soccer
baseball,
players, right?
But yeah,
baseball,
yeah. Baseball. I mean, you got the right general role. But the pick that I'm going to go with for this is also a sports thing, which is kind of funny. So this is a game that I think, Austin, you played like a couple of years ago, but this is the 3DS version of it. It's Punch Club 3DS. Oh, yeah. It came out in January, which is, I did not play this game previously. It is actually important that it was portable for my experience in terms of this, actually, which is interesting for a couple of reasons. But this came out, the port of Punch Club, which is a sort of fighter sim. You are a boxer, really like an MMA fighter, even though they say boxer and they have a ring. There's a lot of mixed metaphors in this game. Mm-hmm. It's totally okay. Whatever. You're like a MMA fighter. You're very low level at the start, and it's playing off of a lot of tropes of 80s action martial arts movies. You know, your dad was some great fighter, and then you're kind of following in his footsteps. And of course, he was murdered, and you got to, you know, figure out what happened to dad and, you know, climb the ranks as a fighter and become the greatest fighter of all time. And there was expansion content that was put into the 3DS port as well that has this kind of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles vibe to it. There's these underground fights, and they're actually alligators, I think. They're not, they're not Ninja Turtles, but it's pretty much the same thing. You have to fight mutant alligators and sewers and do this sort of superhero stuff, which is really fun, too. So this is very light-toned management style game where you are managing your fighter. You need to make sure you're eating, you need to make sure you're doing, especially at the beginning before you're sort of a big pro headliner fighter, you have to be doing work so that you can afford food. And you have to balance that with training. And you're always training three stats. It's agility, strength, and I believe endurance. And they all kind of correspond with a different animal. It's tiger, turtle, and bear, I think, are the sort of the martial arts disciplines.
Does this track with your experience?
Absolutely, 100%.
Did you go to the tiger dojo to like up your agility?
Oh, yeah. I mean, every day. I mean, the bear strength thing tracks pretty well, you know, and I guess the turtle endurance thing is kind of okay because, you know, turtling up, it kind of tracks.
Yeah.
It's not a complete bullshit metaphor. It's just very,
So what style is your preferred?
Oh, I definitely went agility with endurance as the sort of secondary specialization because that's how I try to do things in real life, too. Anyway, this resonated with me a lot harder than I thought it would, especially because it is, again, like a pretty light presentation. You're doing things like fighting Ninja Turtles and, you know, it's very, very cheesy, you know, mid-80s Van Damme martial arts movie plot. Like, it's very light. And you even have, like, a Rocky-style romance with a girl next door. There's a whole, you know, there's a whole Adrian in there, too, which is also cute. But it really actually super, super resonated with me, partially because I started playing this game right when I started doing grappling again super seriously. And so it was great that this was a portable game because I played it every night sort of on the subway home after grappling. So I'd go to my grappling class. We're taking it really, really seriously, training like four nights a week. And getting back into it again after a while, because I have sort of a recurring wrist injury and it was finally better and I could finally do stuff again, basically. So I was like really excited, and because even it has like thematic resonance, I was super, super excited to go train and then, you know, kind of work on my stats as I was like coming home. And then I would come home, be all sweaty and excited and like, oh, look what I did. I worked on my real life stats today and also my fake stats in my video game that I can bring with me everywhere. And it was really cool to actually be able to bring that with me everywhere because it was a very almost meditative thing for me to be training as a person in real life. I sort of obsess over the training aspect of martial arts and you know, just sports in general. I'm actually much more interested in the preparation part than the actual fighting part. I find it very, very therapeutic to go and train and like put your mind in the dojo kind of thing. Put your body in the dojo. Your mind is in the dojo. It's where I go in real life to kind of just get away from work and personal life and any kind of stress and actually sort of work out, you know, your own sort of issues in a very real and tangible way. So this game actually gave me like a secondary outlet to do that during like other moments.
Like literally coming down from doing it physically, you could then do it again and process the feeling of the training again. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really awesome. And it also, it hit me kind of where I lived in another way, which is you get hurt pretty often in this game. And I sure am an injury-prone athlete. I always have been, and it's kind of been my downfall my entire life. Like, right now, it sucks. I have I injured the same wrist again, so I can't be grappling right now, so I'm very annoyed. And it's very, very, very resonant in terms of stat decay as well. I wrote a short piece about this back when I was playing the game in January or February. But especially after a point, you know, when you're pretty early on in the game, stat decay isn't too, too intense. But especially once you get to higher and higher levels, it becomes more and more difficult to sort of keep your stats up. You need to train all the time. You need to be spending all your time training. So those injuries, when you do have injuries, become even more just painful, almost physically painful in the game that you're playing. You're sad for your character. You're like, no, God, I can't take this much time off of training. I have 10 fights. Oh, my God. You know, like I was getting distraught over this. Almost, and because it actually really, like, I'm about to turn 34. I've always been an injury-prone athlete and a competitive athlete, and holy Jesus shit, does that resonate in real life for me as well. So, you know, surprising from a very light game that maybe didn't mean to be this resonant.
Right.
Maybe I'm the only person in the world who had this reaction to Punch Club, but I really, really appreciate it. It's also a ridiculously fun little management game, you know, sort of on top of all the thematic stuff. But yeah, Punch Club 3DS, I would have been very dishonest with myself if this were not on my list. You know, as we're going through the great games of 2017, you know, sort of in the you know, air quotes there, you know, I'm trying to finish everything. I'm trying to play everything. I'm trying to get all this stuff in for my list. And really being honest with myself, I was like, no, Punch Club really needs to be in there. I loved this game. This experience meant something to me. I am putting it on my list. So it is on my list.
Awesome. That is what our lists are for, right? Like, I feel like at the end of the year, especially, we often, it can be hard to separate the larger conversation about 2017, about whatever year it is. Like, I have to talk about games from this year, period, full stop. And I think part of that often comes from us wanting to highlight things that did have an impact this year. Like, I know that I've spoken to people who say, like, well, Battlegrounds isn't my favorite game of the year, but it had such a clear impact on gaming and blah, 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 that I wanted to include it at a high spot. And so I think that there is part of that thinking that is understandable. But I also, it's our lists, God damn it.
Yeah.
Like, we decide what's on these lists. Yeah, exactly. It's what we played this year. So, Patrick, you're allowed to have two games on there as number 10. Danielle, you're allowed to have a port from a game that came out 2 years ago. And Rob, you're allowed to have a racing game that's not about racing cars
from the wrong year.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm sure I have some bullshit on here too. I haven't figured it out yet.
Buckle up for when I finish Dead Space next year.
Hell yeah!
And start passionately advocating.
Game of the year 2018, Dead Space 1.
2008, right? Is that exactly 10 years after?
10 years later.
Yeah, that probably says.
Yeah.
God. All right, I think that is going to do it for this episode. We will be back throughout the week for more of these. We're going to talk about other trends from that through the year, more of our favorite games, and you know, maybe even we'll even talk about Alien Alloys at some point. Maybe that'll come up. We'll see. I'm Austin Walker. You can listen to me on Twitter talk about bullshit at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Patrick?
Find me at Patrick Klopik.
How about you, Danielle?
At Danielle R.I.
And Rob.
At Rob Zachney.
Follow us, all of us, and all the stuff that we do over at Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice, waypoint.vice.com. You can talk to us over on our forums at discourse.zone. And as always, thank you to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Stay tuned for more of our deep dives into the games of 2017 and our bullshit conversations that go on for at least 20 minutes longer than we expect them to. What do we say, Danielle?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.